Hello, and welcome to the Gavel Podcast, brought to you by the Pennsylvania Legislative Black Caucus. This podcast provides insightful discussions on legislative priorities, policy issues, and the fight for racial and social justice in Pennsylvania. My name is April Ash, and today we have in the studio State Representative Justin Fleming of the 105th Legislative District, and that is Dauphin County. Welcome,
yes,
Rev. How are you today?
I'm well, April. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate being here.
Thank you so much for taking the time to just sit down and talk with us. We are in a very peculiar time right now. And so first and foremost, how are you holding up in this peculiar time?
I'm doing okay. It's not easy. I'm doing okay, but I know a lot of people are struggling. And so that's difficult. When I have constituents reach out to me and say, hey, you need to fight on behalf of our immigrant populations, you need to fight on behalf of the LGBTQ plus population. You need to fight on behalf of marginalized communities. That's what I'm here to do. And it has been difficult for some. I'm holding up okay because I have to. We are all in this together. We are living in a very strange time. We're just talking about this with Senator Kim. There has been a compact between the federal government and the state government, and this current version of our leadership, the Trump administration, is just throwing that compact and that agreement completely out of the window. So we need to readjust, refocus, and figure out how we move forward with or without the federal government and keep it moving here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
100%. I could not agree with you more. And in talking about the federal government, we noticed that there are federal government tariffs that have been placed upon, our neighbors in Canada and Mexico, which for Pennsylvania, it directly affects our dairy farmers, our small businesses. And I know that the legislature and Governor Shapiro have done a fantastic job of trying to ensure that jobs stay here,
right,
and the workforce development is strong here. Just not too long ago, we noticed that Governor Shapiro did announce his support for the efforts for the Civil Service Modernization Act. And that is a legislative initiative co-sponsored by yourself, Representatives Dave Mattson, as well as Representative Nathan Davidson and Senator Patty Kim. So with that, how will the Civil Service Modernization Act assist those laid off federal workers in finding new opportunities within the Commonwealth's workforce?
That's a great question, April, and it's really simple. The Civil Service Modernization Act is long overdue. We did some reforms about 4 years ago, but the Civil Service Act is about 86 years old. And so what they are doing is they are aligning state jobs to the same requirements as federal jobs because we're trying to make the transition easy. We've already seen, for example, our neighbors in Cumberland County that have been laid off at the Navy Depot. We've already seen folks at the USDA on the federal level be laid off. And so what we're trying to do is simplify that the state civil service system so that federal employees who may need work can more easily come. They have experience, they've been working in this field, and they can more easily come and work for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania seamlessly because, the Shapiro administration, Shapiro Davis administration has been great about jobs and economic development. I mean, our unemployment rate has been, I think we're riding something like a 28-month low or something like that, and unemployment keeps going down month over month. And so that's a good thing. When people are working, that's a good thing. And we want to keep that going. I mean, I will say even before the tariffs and, the layoffs, I have to give the Shapiro administration credit for suing the federal government when they did the funding freeze. Again, we are living in very strange times. We've never had that instance before, except during a paused government shutdown, like when they couldn't fund the government. We've run into issues like that before, but not a funding freeze on the edict of a president, much less someone who was unelected like Elon Musk. And so I think a lot of people are taking issue with the way the federal government is working right now. Fortunately, the Shapiro Davis administration and every single cabinet secretary we spoke to in our budget hearings that we just concluded, they are looking for solutions for Pennsylvania.
I love that. And, as you talked about the workforce development being at a like, it needs to be as strong as it needs to be. That makes me think about our children mm-hmm. and the next generation so that we can prepare them as best way as we can. And in Pennsylvania, the child care workforce has dropped by 40% between 2019 and 2023. That means that the child care workforce earnings fail to meet the cost of living standard in each of the state's 67 counties. As a majority member of the Children and Youth Committee, we have seen your dedication relating to improving the child care workforce across the Commonwealth. And some of those include the initiatives to implement age appropriation curriculum. And it also includes, you know, the advocacy for affordable child care solutions. On February 24th, First, you hosted a policy hearing to highlight the child care crisis. Why do you believe that focusing on the child care workforce and the child care crisis can help to focus contributing to a more equitable Pennsylvania?
Yeah, I mean, it's really simple, April. We can't have a workforce without child care. I mean, a lot of our population needs to go to work. We have seen, unfortunately, the country is moving in a way where income inequality is getting larger and larger. And so you need a two-income household in order to make it. As a single parent, it's really, really difficult. And even as a two-parent household, it's really difficult. Both parents now need to work. We can't go back to the 1950s where one parent worked and one parent stayed at home. You know, before I joined the General Assembly, I had the great privilege of being a mental health and child advocate. And so advocacy for children in this realm, I did it for 4 years before I got elected to the state house. And so this has been part of my passion for quite a while. In order to have people working, we need reliable childcare. In order to have reliable childcare, we need to pay the childcare workers more than the $15.15 an hour on average that they're making. Yes. The bargain used to be, you know, they could get free childcare. If they worked at a childcare facility, they could get free childcare and make a living wage. Since COVID, that is out of the window. And one of the more disturbing statistics I saw during COVID was we saw a rash of women who dropped out of the workforce, even if they were the primary breadwinner, to stay home and care for kids. What did that do to families? How did those families make it economically? I can't imagine it was very easy. Yeah. And unfortunately, we've had a continuation of that. We've had childcare facilities close. Now, we are fortunate in this area, in Dauphin County in central Pennsylvania. You can throw a stone and basically hit a good childcare facility. But for other areas of the state, even go as close as York County, about 30, 40 minutes away, there are childcare deserts there where there might be one provider within 35 or 40 minutes, one childcare provider. And usually in areas like that, it's a church-based childcare provider, you know, if you can get a spot in there. And of course, they're limited with the staff they can hire and the ratios they have. And so we need to pay the childcare workforce more. We need to dedicate more resources. And I will say, I will give the Shapiro-Davis administration credit on, and we have a blended model for childcare and pre-K. On the pre-K side, there's about a $15 million investment to increase the pre-K rates that we pay to teachers who are teaching our pre-K kids. And on the childcare side, there's a $55 million proposal for retention and recruitment grants, about $1,000 per teacher for childcare facilities to either retain their childcare workforce or recruit new childcare staff. So we've seen it work in other areas with police, with teachers, where we retain that workforce with these grants. And so I'm hopeful it'll have the same effect in the childcare space. So I want to give the Shapiro-Davis administration credit for that proposal. And hopefully it's something that comes into the final budget and is part of the final budget process.
And, you know, as all of those things work together, it then brings me to thinking about with the workforce, in relation to workforce, teacher certifications for our marginalized communities, the immigration community. We have seen so many attacks, you know, and with ICE being a imminent threat to our marginalized communities, what is the legislature doing to ensure that those folks that are actually working, they are paying taxes,
right.
They are living in our communities. What is the legislature doing to make sure and ensure that these folks are protected and that they are a part and that they know that they are a part of our community?
Yeah, so the first thing is, number one, just a recognition of what ICE is and what they can do and they cannot do. I'm going to give Emily Kincaid, my colleague on the House Appropriations Committee, full credit for this because she really coached us up. Immigration and Customs Enforcement is not a law enforcement agency. Being in the country illegally is only a misdemeanor. The problem is it can really upend your life because we're so backed up. What I am more concerned about, and listen, if you're an immigrant in this country, I say we welcome you. If you are doing your thing, if you are working and you're paying taxes, if you run afoul of the law, that's where we have to sit up and say, okay, are you really making yourself a productive citizen here? However, the real danger, and I have spoken to my constituents about this, the real danger is those folks who are here on temporary visas or green cards who have done everything right, who are working, who are contributing to the economy and paying taxes, by the way, and receiving no benefit aside from like paved roads and things like that. An immigrant cannot get Social Security. An immigrant cannot vote legally. And so they are paying in to our society. They are contributing, but they are really not receiving tangible benefits on the back end. The real danger is we need to make sure that the federal government continues to process visas and green cards in an efficient, effective manner, because if that process goes too long, suddenly you're creating someone who's out of compliance, and then, oh, here comes ICE, and when they're trying to do everything right. Yeah. And so that's been my major concern. And so I wrote a letter to our federal elected officials, Congressman Scott Perry, Senator McCormick, and Senator Fetterman. And I actually have a meeting coming up next week with Congressman Perry's office. He took me up on my offer to meet. And so this is one of the things I'm going to talk to him about, in addition to the budget reconciliation bill, which has deep cuts to Medicare and Social Security and Medicaid to enrich those at the top of the economic spectrum. And I am not here for that. No working Pennsylvanian should be here to make sure Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk and Bill Gates and Mark Zuckerberg get richer off our backs, raiding the Social Security Trust Fund so we can, make them an extra billion or two. Yeah. That should not be high on any working Pennsylvanian's priority list. It's certainly not high on mine. And so I'm going to have the opportunity to discuss those things with Congressman Perry, and I appreciate him and his staff opening that door to my office.
Well, I look forward to hearing more about what they are going to be doing and the efforts in that measure. So we appreciate you for standing up and being a voice, for the voiceless and for all that you have done. I mean, you have been a phenomenal force to be reckoned with since you got here, and you have had, a lot of experience in government and policy. I mean, you served as commissioner. You have also been, you have great relationships with the workforce development. So I know that through your efforts, we're going to make some progress here. So continue to do that hard work.
Thank you.
Continue to, create those relationships and those networks.
Yeah.
And I just have one last question for you. And this one is just this one is just a little different from all the other topics.
Okay.
If you had to title yourself as a movie, what would it be and why?
All right. This one's easy for me, actually, because I've made this comparison. Forrest Gump.
Okay.
And okay. Let me explain. I did not intend at any point to be a state representative. I mean, I grew up in Susquehanna Township. It had always been Republican. I never thought I would get this opportunity. I am grateful and blessed that I have. But like, you know, even starting out, my first job was at Channel 21. I started out as a production assistant, lowest person on the totem pole, operating cameras, editing videotape. I worked for three different state agencies in the Rendell administration for 6.5 years, was press secretary at agriculture, did the 2010 farm show. And then I was a lobbyist for social workers, psychologists, and kids. And so every step on that rung took me almost like Forrest Gump, where every little thing he did took him to a place that he really couldn't imagine he'd be. And I have a story to tell you. I'm a poor kid from Edgemont. I sit here at 44 years old and I still think of that kid who, you know, was struggling economically, you know, living in a house with his dad, his stepmom, his three sisters. And, you know, my dad was a truck driver and he worked his tail off just trying to make it month by month by month. I mean, I learned about budgeting when I was 7 years old. I learned about bills when I was and child support. I hate to say it, but I learned some of these really hard things at a very young age. And I knew there was a better way to make it. God bless my dad. He's been gone for a year, but he worked his tail off to ensure that I could have this future. And for that, I will always be grateful. And just like Forrest Gump, every little step I took kind of led me to where I am now. So as improbable as it is, I'm here. And like I say, I'm blessed and privileged to be doing this work every single day. And as long as the voters will have me, I will serve and try to do my absolute best for them.
Thank you so much for that. I definitely can appreciate it. Our love and condolences to you and your
Thank
family.
You.
I know that your father is proud. You know, he's watching over you, and so he continues to be your armor bearer and keep you up.
Absolutely.
And so for that, we are grateful.
Thank you so much.
And I
have to say, April, you are absolutely phenomenal at what you do. It's been being part of the Legislative Black Caucus is amazing. You are the glue that holds us all together and keeps us moving in the right direction. So thank you for the work that you're doing. You are absolutely indispensable. We appreciate you.
Don't make me cry up here. Do not make me cry up here, but I am so grateful for that. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you
so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to come and talk with us and to educate us a little bit more about policy and government.
Thank you so much.
And this has been another episode of the Gavel Podcast. We look forward to seeing you next time.